You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 495.
The bar's closed. It's time to go home. It's not too cold to walk it. I have a beer in my pocket.
Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario, where I don't think I'm legally allowed to leave. Joining me on tonight's show, sheltered down, well, maybe not sheltered down. I mean, John, you're in Philadelphia, but you guys are all just, you're free to go, right? Like, you solved the problem.
No, it's still quarantine in effect here. Adam, I want to know, are you legally not allowed to leave because of quarantine, or did you, like, commit a felony?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. I don't know how your local authorities are doing it, but we have a twice daily news conference that happens up here where at around noon, Trudeau does a little conference, and he's looking like increasingly disheveled in each of them, and then after that, the Premier of Ontario does his own little news conference, which is the one that I've been tuning into more lately, because that's the one that's trying to dictate when various businesses are allowed to open or not open around here. And we have one of those today where they loosened the restrictions just a teeny tiny little bit. And you know, I can apparently go to a whole variety of retail stores now, but I still can't take my kids to see their grandparents. So it's weird times. It's weird times. But yeah, well, I think I can leave. I probably shouldn't though. So that's John in Philadelphia. Also we have Hallie Bullet in the mountains, right?
Still in the mountains. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm still in quarantine. I did manage to somehow still get myself into trouble today, though, because I accidentally posted a picture of my nipple on Instagram without realizing it. And I had to take it down. So yeah, I'm in the mountains. I'm quarantined, but still somehow managing to like embarrass myself in public.
John, did you have that problem today?
You guys are so speechless. Listen, let me just say, the nipple was just sort of poking out of my shirt in a way that I didn't realize. It was in the very, very bottom corner of the photograph. I'm telling you, many, many people looked at this photograph without realizing it. And then like someone that I don't really even know, but who follows me on Instagram, had to write me a DM to be like, "Hey, I don't know if you noticed, but your nipple is in that photograph." And I was like, "Oh God, all right, I guess I'll take that down now."
Well, at least he wasn't like a pervert, you know what I mean? At least it was someone trying to look out for you, you know? But
no, he did seem like he was trying to look out for me, absolutely. But at the same time, why was he looking at the photo that closely? Because like I did not notice it, and like none of my close friends that looked at the photo, like everyone was just commenting on it. Like no one was saying like, "Oh, P.S. nipple," but you know,
I think some people just move through the world naturally tuned into nipple, and that's what they're looking for at all given times.
I love that theory that some people are naturally tuned into nipple.
But that's good. That means you're, I mean, if you have the time to embarrass yourself on the internet, like anyone could have pre-pandemic, that means you and yours are all keeping safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, this was the big thing that happened to me today. So yes, you're right.
I had the very first instance where I had to leave my office for a work purpose yesterday, which was my business partner contacted me and he said, "Oh, we want to go meet with this one client, and let's just come down, just come out and meet with the client." And I was like, "All right." So I put on my incredibly ninja face mask that I built for myself yesterday. I've been sort of moving through the world using a set of sawdust masks that I just had in like the garage workshop area from before everything going crazy. But I was getting a little bit tired of those, and I wanted something that looked cool. So I did the most punk thing imaginable, which is I took a pair of black skinny jeans that I had blown out the crotch on and cut one of the legs off, and then made made like a really, really gangster looking mask on it. And I go into this meeting, and I'm expecting to meet with like a guy in an office. And I walk into a boardroom that is like 20 feet long, like a tiny little boardroom, essentially, that had like 7 to 8 dudes sitting around a boardroom table, all of them, you know, in their 50s to 60s, all of them unmasked. And I kind of walk into this room and I'm just like, yee, like this is a potential incubator. And, you know, if anyone's going to be gonna suffer if they get sick, it's you guys. And someone jokes to me like, oh, we're all 6 feet apart. Like, I'm like, no, you're not.
Adam, why are you just criticizing the United States for not taking this seriously? And then you...
I am also criticizing boomers for not taking this seriously. my mother included in that list. But yeah, no, but I come into this meeting and I'm just like, I'm like, shit. Well, like, for a little while, I felt a little bit self-conscious that, like, I'm going to be the guy in the meeting that is going to stubbornly not take off his face mask, whereas everyone else is kind of sitting around the table, you know, apparently unaffected by what's happening in the universe. But I held my own, John, and I sat there for an hour looking like I was going to rob the train and did my whole meeting and wandered out. And I was worried
how they know it was you? You just said somebody else.
I was a little bit worried that my boss and business partner, who's about who's 15 or so years older than me, 20 years older than me. I was worried and unmasked. I was worried that he was going to be like, you know, we were going to come out of there and he was going to be like, "What are you doing?" Like that was not the vibe that we wanted to project into that meeting. But no, I got the opposite. Those guys really needed to see someone come in and do that to shake them out of their tree a little bit. And I was like, oh, good. That's what I want to do. Is I want to shake people out of their trees while looking like a, you know, looking like a bandito. So these are weird times, John.
Well, listen, it's going to get weirder because you can always just say podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail, even your weird mail. Here's some mail. It's not that weird, honestly. This is from Darren, who put a question mark after his name for some reason. So it's from Darren. Dear Punk News Podcast, you mentioned episode 500 every episode for like the past 10 episodes. But I think you'll do the thing you did with 399 and 400, where you just keep extending 399 into 399.9 and then 399.99 and then 399.999 and so forth. Do you actually have the guts to cut to the chase this time? From Darren with a question mark.
That was, for the record, a joke that I didn't find funny after the first time we did it, but then we did it for like 2 months.
I thought it was hilarious every time.
Oh no! I why did we do it? There was a real logistical reason.
Was it because you were having an emotional crisis and you weren't sure if you wanted to come back to the podcast or not? So I, respecting your rights as a human being, pulled an audible and said, we're just going to continue 399.999, 399.9999, and so forth till Adam comes back.
I was going to say, like, was it just that we were really behind and that we had all this stuff like waiting to come out? But I mean, like, me having a crisis is an entirely valid thing that could have happened. That's actually more likely. So I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm not having a crisis right now. Questionable Darren, or whatever we're going to call you. Maybe Darren. No, I'm good. John and I had a fucking meeting yesterday. We got on the horn and talked to each other and didn't record it and said, let's discuss the podcast. And it was very positive and non crisisy.
Indeed.
We got plans, so, Darren.
Plans. We got plans. All right. This is from Ozuez, I think. Adam always talks about bands that have put out one demo and then disappear. John never shuts up about the Melvins, who have 157 albums. Hallie walks the line between the two, I think. Do you have a band? Do you think a band can have too many albums? Should some bands just break up, or if not break up, just play, keep playing from a set of songs so they don't dilute their catalog? What's the point of having 100 songs if people only want to hear 10 of them? Why not just start a new band to keep the better band pure? From Ozawed.
You want to field that one first? Because I got an opinion.
Are you asking me, Adam?
Yeah.
Or Hallie?
Or Hallie, or someone. Not me.
Hallie, can you get off? What do you?
I mean, you know what? I feel like I'm a broken record. I would say the same thing. Like, people should make shit if they want to make shit. You don't have to listen to it. I don't know. I totally get how people would feel that way. It's just, it's not my take on it. I think if people want to make shit, they should make it. If you're not into it, then yeah, then, you know, you're going to be requesting those 10 songs that you like at the show, and hopefully the band, obliges. But like, I don't know. I think people should make stuff if they want to make stuff, and they shouldn't have to break their band up, because you have some purity test that you want them to meet. I don't know, but you know me, that's like my boring, that's my take on everything. I think people should make what they want to make.
I agree. I mean, my favorite bands are bands that have a massive cat. Like, I don't want to say it's easy to make one killer album, because it's not easy to make one killer album. But as difficult as it is to make one killer album, it's even harder to make 10 killer albums, you know? And like, Alice Cooper has some he's got a couple bad albums, but he's got amazing albums after his bad album. The Melvins don't have any bad albums. The Melvins have just all good or amazing albums. Danzig actually had some amazing albums, then some not so good ones, then some really good ones. So I think even though from the fan perspective, it might be, we'll just have, you know, just the best stuff. Sometimes if bands keep working, they come out with even better stuff. Gwar is the best example. Their first three albums are awesome. Their next four albums are okay. But then their five albums after that are like friggin' killer. So I think sometimes you have to go through that rocky road to kind of get to the next level. So I'd rather a band puts out some mediocre and some bad stuff in the hopes they'll get more awesome stuff. I mean, do I regularly listen to Gwar's Carnival of Chaos? Almost never. But without Carnival of Chaos, I wouldn't have War Party or Beyond Hell or Lust in Space, which are amazing albums. So, you know, or there's a band like the Dwarves. Every album is killer and every album's a little different. So yeah, I don't think I can agree with that, but I can appreciate how the Sex Pistols have one amazing album. X-Ray Specs, for all intents and purposes, have one killer album. That's cool, but I think I'd rather, if I had a choice, the band works through the more difficult time period to come out with cooler stuff later on. As a related note, Adam White, I meant to bring this up. You listened to Hawkwind for the first time, Adam.
Yeah, I did. My family was pissed off. They were not they were not having it. But John, last weekend, I was washing the floor, and the family seemed to be elsewhere. And I was like, you know what? If I'm gonna wash the floors, I'm gonna crank the stereo. I'm gonna go pick the Hawkwind album from the list that has the most the most psychedelic spaceships on the cover, and start there. And you know, then move on to the one that's got some Lord of the Rings art or whatever, and just let my freak flag fly blah, I can't speak. And it was I enjoyed the weirdness. I enjoyed when they decided to stop monologuing about wizards and play rock and roll songs.
Oh, I love that stuff because it's so weird and whacked out.
Oh no, it's weird. But there are definitely moments where someone would yell to me from somewhere else in the house about like what is the noise that is happening right now, which is not a thing that tends to happen, despite the fact that I listen to a lot of music that people would be offended by. So just take that for what it is. I really want to answer this question though, because I have an unexpected take on it, which is to say, I have I think it's probably a very like lefty internet take on the question that we were asked, which is that there's a whole class issue here that no one touched on, which is, if you're talking about a band in the modern context, which is to say a band that is getting together in a garage in 2020 and starting to play some music and stuff like that, the best that you can hope for, I think, is that they they put out one or two cool releases, and then they break up, and then those members go on and, you know, reconstitute themselves and put out different music. And hopefully over the decade or whatever that those artists are actively making stuff, you've got a cool catalog of things that amasses between the 25 different bands that they've all been in. But that is the best, I think, that you can hope for these days, if in all of but the most exceptional circumstances. Just because the money is not there to support anyone making the kind of stuff that you were talking about before. Because you want to look at your examples of people with huge catalogs, right? Alice Cooper, the Melvins, Danzig, Gwar, like, these are all artists that came from the era where there was someone helping them pay for this shit, helping them, like, be a band as a career. And, you know, when you've got the financial backing to, like, you know, go tour, get back in the studio, go tour, get back in the studio, go tour, get back in the studio, not have to worry about, you know, going to work in a grocery store, and, you know, maybe your boss will give you a weekend off when you can go a town over and play a show. Like, you can make art at a completely different level of intensity and stuff like that. And you have the financial incentive to, you know, to stick it out and to be in that band and stuff like that. When you're just some bedroom recording artist or just like a bunch of guys, you know, that have managed to eke out a practice space in a big city for a little while, you don't have those ties that bind that I think can keep a band together in the same way. So it's just like, it just works totally different there. So it's, you know, I agree with John that, like, a big cool catalog from a band is super interesting and gives you as a listener, like, an amazing archive of shit to go through. But, you know, for all but the, you know, the richest kings of Europe, basically, that ain't happening with bands these days. Like, you know,
true.
For every Against Me that manages to get together, or for every like who are the big bands that are, or even like a smaller band, say, that has a catalog that they're building, like, for every, like, Off With Their Heads, you know, you have, you know, a similar constituted and sounding band in 300 cities in the US, and, you know, none of them has the money to, you know, to tour for more than a whatever vacation their boss gives them, right? So it's tough. It's money.
In fact, we will address that grand tragedy with our first or second story tonight.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my Marxist read on your question, guy whose name I can't remember.
Otherwise, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail.
I also feel like I have to amend my answer, and I won't spend too long talking about it, but I think as an artist, I always really try to respect when artists just keep, like you were saying, John, like, maybe the albums aren't exciting anymore, but I'm glad, I don't know, there's, as an artist, there's something where I respect that they're still trying. But, like, I have to definitely cop to, like, as a fan, there are definitely bands I've just started to roll my eyes at and been like, why are you, like, what are you? I, you know, it's not that I don't, I totally, I have totally had that feeling that, sorry, I've also forgotten the name. What was the name of this, the person who wrote in?
It was like Ozymandias or something.
Ah, yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, I can't dismiss the point, because I've definitely, as a fan, I've totally felt that wholeheartedly. Like, why are you putting out this trash and ruining this, somehow in, like, retroactively ruining the stuff of yours that I liked, you know?
Granted, I would take that if people would just pay bands.
Mm-hmm.
What a fantastic dream that bands actually got paid.
They got paid to become increasingly horrible.
And that's like Weezer, right? I feel like that's how you described Weezer.
I've got a song. How about this? So this band reached out to me. This is the Poppy Seeds. The Poppy Seeds are from the LA area, and they do kind of a Nuggets style, you know, Nuggets garage rock kind of thing. They reach out to me. They say, John, we know the podcast. Will you play our song? I say, yes, I will. So this is Crazy with a K by the Poppy Seeds, And I gotta say, it's kind of cool. So this is Crazy with a K by the Poppy Seeds from California.
Awesome. I like Nugget style stuff. So here we go. We have a whole bunch of news and stories, and some of it is, I don't know, is all of it sad? Some of it's...
most of it's pretty happy, I think. Well, it's a mix.
This is a back and forth week, actually. I mean, like, if you ignore the looming crisis, maybe it's on average okay. This is the one we're going to start with, though, and it's about a death, but it is about a life lived, however. So, as everyone knows, if you know, you've tuned into the internet or anything lately, rock and roll pioneer Little Richard passed away just recently, 5 days ago as of us recording this. He was 87 at the time of his death. The official cause of death was bone cancer, but, you know, you're 87. That's pretty good. So, anyways, as you know, Little Richard, one of the most important figures in modern music, and we are certainly not going to be able to summarize the life and impact of someone that you know arguably invented rock and roll. So I don't know. You know, people from that generation are leaving us, and this was a big one. This was a major one. This was an impactful one. If there's one thing that I think is like completely fascinating about this, and I saw someone point this out the other day, for as long as the history of rock and roll has gone on for, we're still at this phase where basically like the people that were there at the start are still there or are now dying off now. Like the entire history of this genre is still kicking, and that's pretty crazy when you think about it.
There's one quote by Lemmy. Actually, it's directly related to Little Richard. Actually, now I think about it, there's a famous quote by Lemmy where he says he remembers the time before rock and roll. That is, before there was no rock and roll. That is, before there was no youth music, and Little Richard was the guy that kicked it off. And so that is fascinating to think that, like, now all culture is aimed at youth, you know, and old people or older people are trying to act youthful through art and culture, you know. But prior to rock and roll, arguably culture and art was not aimed at the young people. It was aimed at the middle-aged people. So that's just something fascinating. Listen, Little Richard is the friggin' man. Those early tracks, I mean, even now they blow the house down. You watch some of those videos, it's crazy. With Little Richard has about, I don't know, 7 mega hits, right? And to a degree, you can make the Chuck Berry argument, which I don't fully agree with either, that, okay, well, Chuck Berry had Johnny Be Good, but he had that one thing, and that's all he did. So perhaps his importance is overstated. And it is arguably – you could argue that the importance of Little Richard is overstated, but I don't think it is, because all the first wave rock stars, you know, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Elvis, all heavily influenced by Little Richard. And Little Richard was kind of the first guy to go wild. Iggy Pop. Before Little Richard, I don't know if there was anybody that went wild and crazy on stage. I mean, I guess there were like New Orleans clubs and that kind of stuff. But within the context of youthful, popular rock music, Little Richard might be the guy. As much as you can say it was one guy, and you probably can't say it was one guy, but Little Richard was like the main guy, if you will. So it is. I mean, listen, he was 87. That's a pretty good run. I don't know if there's a whole lot to be sad about. It's sad when he's passed away, but he had a pretty, pretty good run. I did see on Twitter some people will be people do this on Twitter, especially, and I'm not exactly sure why. They're like, I have mixed emotions about Little Richard. Yes, he was a rock and roll pioneer, but he also said bad things about gay people. And of course, Little Richard was gay, and he went. Sometimes he would say he was gay, and sometimes he would say, "No, I never was gay." And sometimes he'd say, "I was gay, but now I'm not because now I follow Jesus and whatever." And so, I don't think you need to dog Little Richard about that. I don't think Little Richard has ever said anything hateful, but more so, you don't know a person until you walk a mile in their shoes, which is very true. Little Richard grew up in Macon, Georgia, which was very not only was it very racist, I'm sure it probably even worse. Almost equally as bad to be gay, you know, and a very religious environment. His dad hated him because he was gay. And so I don't think you can dog Little Richard for at the end of his life saying, well, I don't think people should be gay. You don't know. You know, nobody's perfect. And wild and crazy artists rarely are perfect. I don't think he ever said anything hateful. And so I don't think that's the place to bring that up. You know, people are complex, and especially someone like Little Richard, who throughout his life had contrasting messages thrown at him. You know, he's got a whole segment of his own family saying it's evil that you're gay. So you can't blame a guy, you know, for feeling shame at being gay, not wanting to be gay, even though he clearly was gay. And so that kind of was one of the bigger discussions in regards to the Little Richard's passing. I don't think it needs to be. I think it's more like more of a footnote. I think what's more interesting is that he invented rock and roll. And not only did he invent rock and roll, he was clearly an out gay man for the majority of his career while he was inventing rock and roll. I think that's the important part. And I just think Little Richard's cheers to him. And I also love how cocky he was, but he deserved to be. Like, he would say, I created rock and roll. And I love it when the artist is cocky, but can kind of back it up, like KRS-One, like James Brown, like Blag of the Dwarves. Like, yeah, they're cocky, but it's kind of true. And that's one of the things I love most about Little Richard.
Yeah, like, I love that too. Like, no false modesty. He would just be like, yeah, he's like, I taught Paul McCartney to sing. I taught, like, Mick Jagger wouldn't have his moves if I hadn't given him those moves. I love that. And exactly like you're saying, it's because he's right. Because most people would just acknowledge that he is right, that he can take credit for a lot of that stuff. And yeah, I don't know. The homosexuality stuff is bad, but if you're going to dog somebody, dog the people that made him feel such complicated and sad feelings about his own sexuality, you know?
Fair. I agree.
Yeah.
All right. So, So I'm now I'm going to dance around for a second here and realize that I have lost the notes about
what here's some great news.
The notes. Oh, here we go. Here. Yeah. All right. This is good. Yeah. So this is
the best news you're going to hear all month. This is probably the best news you're going to hear all month. So of course, we were talking about how bands don't make money. And of course, quite tragically, I don't know if tragic is the right word, but sadly, Jesse Michaels ended Classics of Love just about 10 years ago. Classics of Love with Jesse Michaels' fourth band, fifth band actually, but Jesse Michaels, of course, was Operation Ivy. Classics of Love was his neo-hardcore band with the Hard Girls. And that out, they put out one EP, one album, and I think it was two singles and one exclusive track on the Punk News Mixtape number one. Classics of Love was an amazing, amazing band. I saw them in the Bay Area every single time they played the Bay Area, about 12 times. They were, I can't overstate how great they were, and the record was so awesome. And for a hot minute, for years, it seemed as though Classics of Love kind of faded away, and it seemed like Jesse Michaels was never going to release music again. He was talking about how he was having a little bit of a problem with his voice, and he kind of wasn't feeling it, and he wanted to do more art, and he wanted to do movies, which, listen, I understand. Jesse Michaels, I guess, in supporting our that one writer's letter, I think it was Ozawez, is I don't feel as though Jesse Michaels felt the need to make music if he didn't want to. You know, I think Jesse Michaels only makes music exactly when he wants to. And if he doesn't feel the lightning, then he doesn't. And I think that shows in his work and that everything Jesse Michaels has been put out, Operation Ivy, Classic of Love, Common Rider. Classic of Love and Operation Ivy are mind-blowingly good. I think Classic of Love is the best, honestly. So I think he only puts out stuff that he thinks is going to be great. And he's usually right. Well, that was a long intro because now he's got a brand new band. Or so it seems. It's Jesse Michaels and two fellows that I don't know a whole lot about, Sharif Dumani of the Exploding Flowers and the Alice Bag Band, as well as Peter John Fontes of Los Nauticals. And on Instagram, out of the blue, Jesse Michaels posted a video, and not only were the three of them practicing, Jesse Michaels said he was recording with them. Not only was he recording with them, he was recording analog tape. And from the brief 8-second clip on Instagram, it sounded like hardcore. So if we're getting a sequel to Classics of Love, I'm super excited. I'm sure it's going to be at least good no matter what. But, man, even if it's only half as good as Classics of Love, we're in for a real treat. Interesting that it's only a trio, but we'll see. I'm very excited about this.
I saw Classics of Love play once, I think. They came up to Montreal to play Pooza the one year. And I felt what you were voicing where like the universe doesn't seem to appreciate what Jesse Michaels is doing for some bizarre reason, because I remember going, I made sure of anything that was going on that weekend. I was in that venue at that time when they played, and there was a lot of stuff that went on over the course of that weekend where there was packed rooms full of people. And I feel that like the Classics of Love set was not a packed room full of people. And
that's insane.
Like, I don't like even, which is weird because I figured that like even if you know the universe wasn't going to latch on to a hardcore record he made at that point in his life, you figure that people would still be there just hanging on the Operation Ivy kick, right? But I don't know. Maybe he needed a better publicist or something. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that was not as attended as I thought. It was killer. It was great. But I don't know. Not sure. I'm excited about this. I'd love to hear more stuff from him. He has a very strange muse that sometimes makes him go create videos about people spitting paint at each other and, you know, sometimes make hardcore records. And I prefer the latter. So this is works to my strengths.
I was tickled by this because I actually read about it first on the Brooklyn Vegan site. And that article made me chuckle because they kept having to refer to the punk news piece on it. Did you see this, John? Like you guys had gotten the big scoop on it, because I guess did he post it as like an Instagram story, or did he post, because it's not on
right, Instagram anymore.
It was a story. Okay. Yeah. So I guess by the time Brooklyn Vegan got to it, the story had been taken down. And so they just had to reference everything that you had written about it because you had actually seen the story. So that made me laugh. I liked that.
That pleases me a great deal.
Uh-huh.
every once in a while, that's the payment that we get for this. It's like every once in a while we do something and like the world is sort of forced with acknowledging that we did the thing, and you know that the ones that have to acknowledge it are oftentimes the ones that get paid to do it. So it's nice. That's what we want. We just want to rub that in every once in a while. John Iggy Pop, your buddy, well, everybody's buddy, America's buddy. as everyone knows him, America's buddy Iggy Pop.
Great title for him.
He's going to be re-releasing his first two solo records. So The Idiot and Lust for Life, both originally came out in 77. Both albums have been remastered. The Idiot is coming out with a second disc called Live at the Rainbow Theater that was recorded at London's Finsbury Park in 1977. Lust for Life is paired with the TVI Live album. So those two are coming out, I don't know, not sure when, but they are. Check your local listings. So Pop will also release a 7-CD box set titled The Bowie Years that includes both of those albums, as well as 3 more discs of outtakes, rarities, titles, and live cuts. And oh, here's the date. All of this stuff is out May 29th from UME. What's UME? Universal Music?
Universal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so there you go. You can find, there's a video floating around on YouTube right now that has the alternative mix of China Girl from the Bowie Years set that you can go check out. But there you go. These are things people should be into. That's what I got.
Yeah, two quick things about this is, A, it's about damn time. We are, like we said a couple episodes ago, we are in the golden age of archival releases. That being said, we are on the tail end of deluxe CD releases in that, like, there's not – the only deluxe CDs that get released now, more or less, are CDs aimed at the dad market, sadly. Well, not sadly. I'm glad the dads are getting their jams because I like dad music. But, like, the young people aren't getting deluxe CDs aimed at them, you know? And to a degree, even though it's, quote, only a format, this format, the deluxe CD format, is a format that really works very well with regards to deluxe releases. That you get the album on one disc. You get the live stuff on another disc and maybe the bonus tracks on another disc. And, you know, with the digital stuff, you don't see as much – there actually isn't as much care put into it because there's less skin in the game. When you put out a CD, you have to spend money to manufacture the product and distribute it. So you got to make sure it's a quality item. Well, with digital, it's so easy to throw it up. And I'm not hating on digital that, you know, there's not as much money there and there's not as much care put in there. So I'm very glad that near the end of the era of CDs, we are finally getting deluxe reissues of Iggy Pop's, bar none, two best solo albums. I would say Lust for Life, almost as good as The Stooges, but they're both fantastic. I'm very excited about this. I hope Alice – I keep bringing up Alice Cooper, but we need these for Alice Cooper's like first 12 albums as well, but I just don't think it's going to happen, which is a shame. You know, or Danzig's albums, I just don't think it's going to happen, but at least we're getting it for Iggy's first two albums. This is fantastic. People have been waiting decades for this, and I'm glad it's coming. Well, one thing to tag on to this is the box set and the CD reissues. It's called Iggy Pop, The Bowie Years, and that is true, and that both of the albums were Iggy Pop and David Bowie working in conjunction with each other, and it's not quite both of them on the album, but it's Iggy Pop as produced by David Bowie, and David Bowie sings some backups and contributes some songwriting and playing. And of course, on the TVI album, which is a live album, Adam on the TVI live album, who can you hear playing keyboards and singing in the background in the live setting?
It's Bowie.
It's David Bowie, which is kind of cool. But the point being is, if it wasn't Iggy Pop, and if it was like, I don't know, Black Oak, Arkansas, and Black Oak, Arkansas happened to be produced by David Bowie, it's like, okay, cool. Black Oak, Arkansas, they're all right. But, you know, David Bowie, he's the magical ingredient here. That being said, and this is a minor quibble, Iggy Pop doesn't need David Bowie's name to be the friggin' man, you know? And so I maybe this is just me being a little too not pecuniary. What's the word? When you focus on two minute details, whatever that word is. Like, I sort of feel as though calling it the Bowie years almost insults Iggy Pop. And he wouldn't feel that way because he was great friends with David Bowie. But I don't think it's necessarily fair to say this is special because David Bowie's on it. It shouldn't need that. This is special because it's two amazing killer albums, Bowie on it or not. You know, now Bowie was an ingredient of that, but like David Bowie's not why this is special. Well, David Bowie is one of the reasons why this is special, but the main reason it's special is because it's Iggy Pop's two best solo albums. I realize that's a very small point, but that's just how I felt a little bit.
But I think Iggy Pop would maybe disagree with you, like because he you know, around when Bowie died, sort of talked a lot about how he felt like Bowie had, like, I forget what the word was that he used. It was like bigger than resuscitated, like reincarnated. He felt that Bowie had, like, it was a while ago that I read it, but he described it as if he sort of felt like artistically that he was, like, I guess, in need of resuscitation. So like maybe he felt that he was dead. I don't know if that meant like commercially or artistically, but you know, like, you know, I think he did feel that those albums, those years, that jolt of creativity, that direction that his career took, he feels that absolutely none of that would have happened without Bowie. And maybe he wouldn't name it the Bowie years if Bowie hadn't, you know, like passed recently. Maybe it also feels nice to sort of like acknowledge now more than ever, like that there was this influence and this really symbiotic relationship during those years. It's like, I feel like, yeah, you know, obviously Iggy is Iggy and Iggy's amazing, but yeah, I wonder if it isn't a little bit of just like a tribute to his friend who died recently, or you know, just an acknowledgement.
I don't disagree, and I think you're right. If we ask Iggy Pop, who seemed like a pretty not cocky guy, and well, Iggy Pop actually—that's very interesting. Iggy Pop is confident. He's confident, but he's not cocky. Whereas Little Richard is kind of cocky, but deservedly so, which is an interesting combination. But Hallie, how insane is it between 1977 to 1980? How many amazing albums was David Bowie a part of? How crazy is that?
Yeah, you know? Like, what? Yeah, you're just sort of like, what? I don't know. Like, most people run out of ideas after, like, making one album with, you know, 11 songs on it. Yeah. They're, like, tapped out of ideas, and then maybe they'll come up with another album, like, 2 years later. So, yeah, it's completely shocking.
Yeah.
All right, so one more before the break here. So, we've been following on and off the not just the plights of the small bookers, the small clubs, the small bands in this pandemic, but also with a certain amount of bemusement, I guess, what the big fish are doing. So this is related to that. So Live Nation is they are selling $800 million worth of bonds to the Federal Reserve. So on Tuesday, the Federal Reserve stayed in its corporate bond or started its corporate bond buying program. Under the program, the Federal Reserve will buy both newly issued debt on the primary market and debt that is already being traded on the secondary market. Wasting no time, Live Nation announced plans to sell $800 million in bonds for, quote, general corporate purposes, quote. This essentially means that the public funds are being used to support Live Nation during the current COVID economic downturn. Other companies that have utilized that program include like massive multinational corporations like Disney and Viacom, everyone's favorite party party companies, I guess. So, John, as a foreign national who doesn't quite get what's going on in your country at the best of times, what's my read supposed to be on this? Should I be mad?
Yeah, you should be real mad. If you remember, about 3 months ago, I mean 3 weeks ago, I made the joke that during this COVID economic crisis, I bet the government will even bail out Ticketmaster and Live Nation. Ha! We all laughed. Ha ha ha! Well, that's exactly what they're doing. Yeah, I mean, the truth is stranger than fiction, in that this is literally a bailout of Live Nation, and this is quite. I mean, it's sickening. Like, of all the idea behind, well, it's not under its definition, it's not a bailout; it's a loan, but it is a bailout because federal bonds have very low interest, and that's the idea behind them. But also, the Federal Reserve is notoriously lax at collecting bonds that are due. So it's essentially free money that some of it will get repaid, not all of it. And I understand the idea behind a bailout with the banks or automakers. It's so big that if we don't save these companies, then the entire economy is going to have real issues. But this is just – I mean, it really is depressing. I hate to be a bummer, but it's like if Ticketmaster fails – then who cares? That is not going to end. If Ticketmaster is notoriously insanely overcharging people at an insane amount through Live Nation and Ticketmaster and StubHub and all that garbage. So it is literally just corruption. But not only that, there's two things. A, so we've had what, a 6 week recession with the insane amount of profits that Live Nation shows quarter after quarter. They couldn't survive a 6 week recession. You know, second, I sound like Dennis Miller or somebody. I'm yelling at you guys, but this does annoy me. But I'll calm down. But the point being, second is Live Nation CEOs. There's some graph out there that I think is true that like charts the rise in salaries from the average American to CEOs between 1980 and now, and the amount of increase in CEO income is literally like 500 fold. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. And the argument that CEOs say is, well, you know, we're responsible for a lot and we have extremely rare gifts that we know how to pilot a company. So we're one of the very few people that are able to have these companies achieve such record-breaking profits. Therefore, we're entitled to the money because we're bearing the risk and we have the skill. I don't agree with that 100%, mind you. But okay, let's take that argument. How come in good times they get the bonus, they get the huge multi-million dollar bonus, right? But in bad times, when their skills are not properly piloting a company, John Gentile's taxes has to save them. You know what I mean? Like when they're doing great, they win. When they're doing bad, they win because John Gentile's paying their salary. It makes me very angry.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
This has been a day where a lot of – where I think like two or three places that I just adore in the universe, a few of my favorite like rock venues and bars and whatever else all seem to have like closed like for good in the past couple days. And all those announcements have just been like, just like hit me like a ton of bricks, because like a few of the things that have come up, I've felt like understandably inevitable. Like the big summer music festival that I like to go to out on the east coast of Canada, which is Sappy Fest. So Sappy had kind of held out on formally canceling everything this year, but they finally went and they made the announcement, because this was like an August first weekend in August kind of event. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to be able to, you know, make this happen the way that we want it to happen, given all the restrictions and all that that's happening. So we are, you know, after 14 years of doing this, we're gonna, you know, I guess take, you know, skip it the next year, do something online, do what all the other music festivals are doing right now, because they kind of have to. And well, that's sad, because I love going to that. And that is a, you know, it's become a bit of a pilgrimage for us to go out there. You know, it's, I understand it. And I understand that, like, you know, it'll be back. And one day we'll be back there and we'll be, you know, we'll be more than thrilled to come back. It's the same point that Hallie made last time she was on the show about Fest, where we're like, people are going to go there and they're just going to be elated to be there, right? And that, I feel that. But then one of the things that we do, and this does relate to Ticketmaster, trust me, one of the things that we do every year when we go to Sappy is, so Sappy's in a little town called Sackville, New Brunswick, that is a tiny little university town. And it has like a single street that is sort of the main street of the town. And they close off the whole street for this music festival. And right next to the tent that is like the where all the bands are playing during the day, you have businesses up and down either side of the street. And there are maybe a half dozen little bars and restaurants that are on this street. And there's one of them that is, it was an old bowling alley that was made into a little bar that you couldn't fit a Honda Civic in this bar kind of thing. Like it had like, that is the amount of space that is in there. It's like a little closet of a bar, but the people are amazing and the vibe is amazing. And they do the late night shows there and just everything about it's incredible. It's called Thunder and Lightning. And today Thunder and Lightning announced that like, no, we're done. And like, we have to close. We can't keep it going through this. And it's not like, oh, this is a music festival that can come back in a year and promote itself again. It's that like, this was a business that was run by two people and just, you know, given the students aren't going to the school and the music festival is not happening and people can't go to bars and stuff like that. It's like, they can't financially make it happen. And they've got to pack it up and call it in. And it's just like a gut punch that this place closed, because like, it was a place where you could go there a few times and you could absolutely understand why everyone adores it and why it's family to all these touring bands that are coming through town. And then you hear something about this where like Ticketmaster is getting bonds from the US government. And you're just like, fuck, give some money to Thunder and Lightning so that bar can survive until next summer. Jesus. Like, This Ain't Hollywood, which is the big rock club in Hamilton, Ontario, where I would go see most of my shows these days. It just closed and sold to a bunch of condo developers because they couldn't, you know, hold on and make it happen with everything being shut down. It's just like, this is going to be this continuous shitty summer of everywhere that was cool and small that was related to the live music scene getting just slaughtered. But meanwhile, we're going to bail out Ticketmaster. Like, great.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So yeah, so there we go. Everyone's mad now. let's play a song and then we'll loop back and try to calm down. Hallie, do you want it or you got something on deck?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I got myself all confused last week, and I said that song wasn't last week. When was I on? 2 weeks ago. And I said that the song that I played by Nosta was on Recess Records, and I think I got confused because Todd from Recess had played it on his podcast that he's doing in quarantine. But I was wrong. It was on Let's Pretend Records. And so I'm gonna play something that actually did come out on Recess, which is The Globs. I'm loving this album. The album is The Weird and Wonderful World of the Globs. And it's Mike from the Bananas. And if you like the Bananas, you'll recognize that right away. It's spazzy, it's fun. And super, super enjoyable. And this song is called What is the Sound of Nothing?
right, that was the globs, which is a very fun word to say. Related, I think, in some way to the story that we were just talking about and complaining about before that. Another venue that is out there seeking some help is 924 Gilman on May 16th, which is what, Saturday, this coming Saturday. They're going to host a live stream fundraiser to support the venue. The lineup had not been announced, or hasn't been announced, at least at the time when we posted the story. Maybe that's changed. I don't know.
It has been announced.
Oh, now. All right, cool. So who is playing this thing? Just so we can have.
I should have had it pulled up. I know. You guys keep talking. I'll pull it up.
I got it. It's okay. So they are having Touche Amore, Mom Jeans, Thick, Destroy Boys, Small Crush, Grumpster, Rosie Trucker, Awake But Still in Bed, Sarcasm, and Sour Widows are all taking part in this this live stream event. Is this why I assume it's people like live streaming out of their isolation and not all showing up at Gilman and playing? But
yeah, I think so.
They think so, right? So, anyways, this is Gilman being in the same situation I think that we just talked about, which is that, you know, with no people being allowed to gather places and play music, you know, these venues have to try to scratch something out, even if it is somewhere that has Gilman's, you know, legendary name attached to it. Now, John, of interest in this, though, and this is something you pointed out here, the sponsors of this event, the listed sponsors, are Epitaph Records and Cliff Bars, which is what? Food, right? Like, that, those are candy bars or something.
Yeah.
Right? Who are described as partners in the event. So why does that stick in your craw?
Well, let me put it this way. Overall, I like 924 Gilman. I've been to 924 Gilman many times, and I think it serves a good public service. But with any movement, there's always the threat of fanaticism, and to a degree, 924 Gilman has suffered from fanaticism. 924 Gilman is intrinsically linked with Maximum Rock and Roll, and one of the main rules of Gilman is no major labels. If you're on a major label, you can't play here. If you're affiliated with a major label, you can't play here. All right, that's the rule, except for 924 Gilman is somewhat lax with those rules when they need cash. Famously, for years and years, they wouldn't let Green Day play there, even though Green Day, along with Operation Ivy, kind of made 924 Gilman what it is. But then when 924 Gilman needed money in the late 2000s, oh, well, Green Day can play here now. And so now they're partnering up with a corporation, well, two corporations, but one private corporation, Cliff Bars, so the point being is, if you're with a major label, you can't play 924 Gilman. But if you're not only extremely capitalist, your entire business ethos is forged in capitalism, which is the idea that 924 Gilman is kind of against. Oh, that's okay. Now, I realize I'm being somewhat hard-nosed. And honestly, if you're going to partner with a company, you can do a lot worse than Cliff Bars, because it's a United States company. I believe the product is manufactured in the United States, and it's owned by a guy and not stockholder. So it's better, you know, Cliff Bar than, you know, Nike or somebody like that. So I can't dog on them too much. I'm just a little annoyed. I'm taking it a little personal. Because Maximum Rock and Roll, to less other publications to a greater degree, but Maximum Rock and Roll slightly, 924 Gilman slightly, they've dogged on punk news in the past, saying punk news isn't punk. You know, they're just trying to push a corporate agenda. Meanwhile, punk news is, if you only knew what went on in the interior of punk news, it's pure chaos. There is no agenda at punk news, and the people that have dogged on us all along are linked up with corporations. You know, while attacking us for that. And listen, I don't hate 924. I like 924 Gilman. I just have something stuck in my crawl with regards to 924 Gilman, because every time I went, I got treated like a jerk and it bummed me out, even though I like 924 Gilman. So that's me. That's my life story.
John, do you like 924 Gilman?
I do like 924 Gilman. Every time I go there, I get treated like an asshole. Like, I really do. Like, I think if I wore like a battle jacket, they'd be like, "Yeah, man, welcome to 924 Gilman." But because I wear the John Gentile trademark track jacket and sneaks, I get treated like a jerk.
I think a lot of people have that experience when they go to Gilman. They feel like they get treated like a jerk.
I don't want to diminish the fact that they are probably struggling to survive because everyone is struggling to survive. And, you know, from that standpoint, you know, I hope this helps them in some way. It would be cool if like Cliff Bars just gave them a hunk of money, because you figured that they probably got money. People are still buying Cliff Bars, right? So
yeah, that company's huge. Honestly, you gotta give that guy kudos. And it's just like two people that decide to make a candy bar, and that is like a sports candy bar, and they're both like super rich now. And I mean, honestly, like as far as ethics of a company goes, I think they're pretty on board, to tell you the truth.
I mean, I could understand why maybe it would be sort of weird for Gilman to all of a sudden have like a major corporate patron, but you know, these are weird times. You got to do what you got to do. The one interesting point of this that I just kind of dug up was, I was wondering like, well, does an association with Epitaph not kind of skirt into the issue of major labels, just given that Epitaph has for such a long time been distributed by major label affiliated companies, but that is no longer the case. This is recent, and I guess I didn't pick up on this when it happened. But so Epitaph for the longest time had been distributed in the U.S. by ADA, which is a company that is owned by the Warner Music Group. And Warner kind of like infamously had their hooks into some Epitaph related acts for a little while in ways that were never overtly sneaky, but made a lot of people pause and tilt their heads, specifically when Warner tried to revive the Sire brand, and Rancid like bewilderingly ended up on Warner instead of Hellcat, and I think was it Distillers did as well, and there was a few Hellcat acts that sort of like ended up on a Warner subsidiary after that, and it was weird, but you could definitely say that if there was a certain era when you would go and buy a record released by Epitaph, that there was at least some major label affiliated, you know, eels attached to it. But that is not the case as of 2019, as of October of 2019, actually. There was an independent distribution division of called Amped, which is owned by like Alliance Entertainment, which is still a big company, don't get me wrong, but is not one of the canonical major labels, I believe. And they entered into an agreement to distribute stuff from Anti and Epitaph in the States, therefore ending a really long-standing relationship that Epitaph had with ADA. So I wonder if by like the 924 Gilman calculus, that makes Epitaph more palatable to associate with. But then I would even go further than that and be like, well, does Epitaph's past sins of being in bed with a major label not carry forward, or is this just like a "what are you doing for me lately" kind of thing? I'm fascinated by the politics. I feel like Gilman is the one place where we can still like really roll around in like the major label politics of like 1998 and you know, and refight those battles, and you know, in this like great like pre-internet realm where. Yeah, just that's what I grew up in. I miss it. I miss when we were mad at bands for getting paid. It was cool. But anyways, So that's the Gilman story. So just carrying on the thread about live music being kind of fucked right now. The Rebellion Festival in England, which is one that we talk about on this show. I feel like we've talked about them a fair bit this year. If for no other reason than we're trying to keep a little bit more tabs on the kind of bands that are playing these events. So Rebellion, which was set to go August 6th to the 9th, is now out. It's gone. They've issued a statement that the entire 2020 event has been canceled. Festival passes are being carried forward and good for 2021. And it's being rescheduled for the equivalent weekend next year, hoping that we are, you know, all safe and vaccinated and no longer doomed at that point. So there you go. It moved. I'm not reading their statement because it's 500 paragraphs long, but, John, and you know, any thoughts, any word?
I was saying, Hallie, it seemed as the guy was genuinely sad. And I got to say, the lineup this year actually looked pretty cool. I did see something funny somewhere. It was Rebellion Fest, the Rocklahoma of punk rock, which was a accurate but maybe perhaps overly harsh burn. Hallie, any perspective on this, or a guy putting all year's work, entire year's work into this, and then having just to kick it back one whole year?
Yeah, I think it sucks. I just feel bad for everybody. I don't know. I only have sad things to say about this. It just makes me sad. And I did think, I hope, I guess it's like the 25-year anniversary of the festival next year, and maybe they can, like Adam was saying, hopefully we're all vaccinated and can actually like go do things this time next year. I sort of felt bad for the guy. And also I thought the lineup was pretty cool, and I'm sad for the people that had tickets, and I hope, I don't think it'll be exactly the same bands, but hopefully it'll be a great lineup next year and people can have fun. And that's my very basic take on it.
Hadley, I saw numerous doom and gloom articles that said it'll never be like it was. Live concerts will never be like it was before coronavirus. I feel as though that's overstated, and I think it'll be relatively normal again, not that far away. What do you feel?
I don't know. See, right? This is the question. Because I feel like, they'll come up with a vaccination, and then hopefully things will come back to normal. And then I hear what's the Dr. Fauci or something saying we might never, as a society, maybe we'll never shake hands again. And then I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? Why wouldn't we shake hands? Like, why wouldn't we hug people when we greet them? So I don't know. I feel like maybe I don't think any of us really knows what the heck is going on here or what's going to happen.
What was his stance on dabs? Are dabs still cool?
Wait, what?
the dap is like where you take your knuckle and the other person's knuckle and you go like pat, and then like one guy puts his hand up, the other guy puts his hand down, and you like, go up and down. You know what I mean?
I mean, that sounds really, really cool to me. I think maybe I've got to get up on the daps. Because I sound so old right now. I sound like such a mom. I've got to get up on the daps because maybe that's what we're going to be doing from now on.
I don't buy the most of the new normal arguments that get into extremes. I'll totally buy the, more people will want to work from home. Like, yeah, sure. I will buy we're going to have to be far more stringent about sanitizing, things like airlines and whatever. Like, yeah, okay, that's probably a good idea in the first place. We should have done that, right? I totally get that the plexiglass shields that they've put up in the grocery store are probably not going to come down afterwards, because not for any particular societal reason, but because they are riveted to the checkouts. So
Those make me sad. I mean, I understand them now.
I was in a store, John. And it was like one of the first times I had gone into a store after we were like told the lockdown, and there were like guys in there putting them up, and they were just like putting them up like in a rushed panic, it seemed, in aisles where people were. So all of a sudden they would run over and they would like stop you from bringing your cart forward, and they would get like a hammer drill and fucking put the shield up and then wave you through. Like, they were hanging them as I was in there. And so
virus is coming.
You have all this and I'm just like, I'm stressed out from being in this store and all this happening. But so you don't like the shields?
No, I mean, I like them now, but I would be somewhat that I feel it's kind of a bummer episode. We're complaining a lot, but listen, I feel as though the disconnect between people has increased exponentially with regards to social media. I've told the story a couple of times where, like, I was at Subway. I just started talking to the person next to me, and the person got freaked out just because I was talking to them. You know, like, people are much less social now than they were 4 years ago. And I feel as though the more barriers there are between people, the more people will live in their cell phones, even when they're standing right next to each other, which I think is fundamentally unhealthy.
The one thing I don't buy, though,
the Punk-ish podcast where we talk about happy topics.
I get, well, hey, it's a happy world. I mean, I don't buy the you know, we're not going to be able to have live music anymore kinds of direness that you see from people. And even the stuff that they are touting as like the stopgap measures for this year, I don't buy at all that those are things that people are going to want to do. There's some band up in Canada that, I don't know, some pop rock band that has organized like a concert in the summer that's in like a drive-through theater or something like that. And everyone's going to drive their car in there, and that's going to allow them to maintain, I don't know, proper social distance from each other. And it's a gimmick. That's not a thing that is going to be like, and then you see all these like pundits being like, oh, drive-in concerts are going to be the new thing. And it's like, no, they're fucking not.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And all you have to do is look at the places where, and I'm not condoning this behavior or anything, but all you have to do is look at the places where they have relaxed the restrictions to see what people's actions are after that. And people would way rather socialize and die than not, right? Like was it Wisconsin? So they struck down the law in Wisconsin that was keeping people isolated. So just everyone rushed out to the bars and just started going to the bars, and they packed them, right? And these people aren't, I mean, they're maybe misguided at the moment. They're maybe acting on some baser instincts, but they're not oblivious to the danger that's out there. They're just making a choice that like they would rather, you know, they would rather socialize than try to maintain the health of their community. Again, while it's not a choice that I would make personally, like I understand the impulse. So at the point when we do have a vaccine and we can quote unquote safely start to interact again, then yeah, I figure that, you know, people are gonna go pack into small bars and sweat on each other because like we fucking have to.
Yeah,
I do. Anyways, so all right, so oh, this is a long episode. Look at this. Okay, there's other stuff happening. A bunch of music came out that you may or may not want to know about. The first of these is a couple of John's favorite bands got together and put something out. So Catbite and Omnigon, the latter of which is headed by Adam Davis of Link 80 and Narboots, are releasing a split 7-inch. On the release, Catbite covers White Riot by The Clash and the Omnigon song Horizontal Aggression. That's kind of a cool name for a song. And on the other hand, Omnigon covers Catbite's Scratch Me Up and Link 80's Nothing New. It's out now on Bad Time Records. It's out on Bad Time Records on June 5th with a physical 7-inch due out on June 24th. What's the word, John? These are your bands.
They're both real good, man. It's just a fun release. I mean, it's not a major artistic statement. It's essentially four covers in a row, but it's all real good. I was going to brag, but I won't. Anyways, I love both of these bands. These bands are cool. And people should check it out.
You exclaimed, oh, with such joy. And then you just aren't going to tell us what you were saying, oh, about?
Are you giving me permission to brag?
I'm totally giving you permission to brag.
There's one reason that this split EP exists. And the reason is John Gentile. He knows all the happening young bands. And he knows how to pick them. And of course, Catbite played one of their very first shows at Punk New Summer Soiree 3? No, 2? No, they played at the Magnificent Matinee. And I really dug them, and I followed them ever since. And I put up on a post, and I did a review of their very first release. And Adam Davis, who I know, checked it out, and he loved it. And he wrote to them, and they were thrilled because they're big Link 80 fans. And then they talked to Bad Time Records, and Bad Time Records signed Omnigon because Adam Davis reached out to them. And so, John G is the reason this split exists. I gotta say.
See, that was good, happy news. That was so worth talking about.
Well honestly, like, thank you for saying that. These bands are awesome. I love them. But this ties back to our original letter. Is should a band quit after making one awesome album? Omnigon is Adam Davis's fourth swing at the gate. Link, well, actually fifth, really. But so his first band was Flat Planet, or the first known band. Then Link 80, which was very popular. Then Dessa, which was not popular. Then Narboots, which was not popular at all, but was an amazing band. And I think he kind of got bummed out just because people were not getting NAR boots. Like, they put out a lot of music, and like, just I was like, no one cared except for me. I love NAR boots. So then he just he did kind of like not a retro ska punk band, but like just like a straight up aggressive, not aggressive, but a straight up energetic ska punk band. And people are digging it. So Adam's getting another a second wind at, I don't want to say fame, but people caring about his music. You know what I mean? And it's great. And Catbite is just amazing. I mean, Catbite really is an amazing band. They're just perfect modern ska, if you will. And I don't want to overstate the ska aspect because not every song is ska. And it's not like cheesy ska. It's more like two-tone. But both these bands are awesome. And I am happy. I'm very happy people are digging them. So all we need now is for Crazy Nick Brains to pop. And then I'll be done. Then I'll shut up forever. Punk News. So listen, you Punk News readers that don't like reading what I wrote, make Crazy Nick Brains ultra famous and then I'll shut up. How about that?
There you go. That's how you get John to shut up, everyone. That's how you do it. John, you take these last two stories here. What are we talking about?
Let's see. We're running kind of long, so let's just blast through them. Oh, okay. Well,
Whichever ones you want.
We'll just close out with this last one, and we'll end on a happy note. Cassie Ramone of the Vivian Girls. She's had a punk band for a while now, actually. She's had a couple different incarnations. It's called OCDPP, and it's her and two other people. I don't know the other two people that well. I think they were in punk bands as well, but I don't really know them. They just put out – it's actually not their debut because they put out a few tracks here and there. But it's technically their homecoming release or debutante release, if you will. It's called the 7-inch EP, but it's all digital. So I love how the 7-inch LP, and it's all digital. So I like how it's three contradictions in a row, which I think is funny and cool. And Cassie Ramone is such a unique singer, and she has such a unique perspective and a identifiable perspective. And what's cool about this is Vivian Girls is very big, very loud, very – there's a lot of noise in Vivian Girls, which I love. OCDPP – OCDPP, right? OCDPP is somewhat more focused sonically. It's really kind of more garage punky, if you will, or just straight up punky. And Cassie Ramone, Katie Goodman, I'm big fans of both of them, and I think this is cool. Hallie Bill, did you check this out at all?
Yeah, I love it. I didn't even know this band existed. I was like super excited to listen to this stuff today.
It rocks. Cassie Ramone, Adam White, bring it on home.
Oh boy. All right. So here's a song. It is the opposite of what we have, of the dire turn that this show seems to have turned. So there's a label out in London, Ontario called Get Party with one exclamation mark, Get Party Records. There is a band on that label called Yeah Bud that has three exclamation marks. There's also a band on that label called Snacks that has a question mark. Now, all of these bands and labels are doing something I hate, which is putting punctuation in their names. But I'm going to give it to them this time because members of Snacks and Yeah Bud have put together a super group, which is called Hey Dad. And Hey Dad has three exclamation marks as well. And the Hey Dad band has put out a new single. It is called Life's All Right. It is super fun, like early 2000s pop punk that is kind of like as lovably dumb as you could hope for, and is you know, it's about the summer and it's about niceness, and it's just, you know, you close your eyes and you can just imagine that you're bopping around in a bar that hasn't been shut down by horrible economic conditions. So here you go. This is Hey Dad with Life's All Right.
Yeah.
And we are at the end of the show. If you want to email us, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. Any parting words, John? We're one closer to 500 or 499.999999 or whatever we do.
Well, listen, the countdown to 500 has begun, and we've got some cool stuff in the works already, so stay tuned for that. Next week, we're going to have Western Addiction on the show, so we'll see how that goes. And listen, man, stay positive. I mean, we talked about some annoying things, but there's a lot of cool music out there right now. OCD PP, Catbody, Omnigon, Iggy Pop reissues. A lot of cool stuff staying out there. Stay positive. Stay healthy. Do what you got to do, baby.